Welcome to the Brown County Hour.
Coming to you from the legendary hills of Brown,
where the plum purple haze,
the one nature herself drapes over the hills and hollers,
inspires local characters, artists, and nature lovers.
It's as though the hills themselves conspire to create a beauty and culture in the heart of Indiana.
Sit for a spell and hear the music.
Tall tales.
True stories.
And current goings on.
Brought to you by folks who still know how to sit by a fire in winter.
And swim buck naked in summer.
Welcome to episode 162 of the Brown County Hour. This is Pam Rader.
And Dave Seastrom, along with the rest of the crew. Our musical guest this month is Dietrich Gosser. We recorded a selection of his original music in our studio from his 2013 CD, Oh to Begin. And we'll be playing that song and several others. We also have the latest installment of Stoveside Surveys from Rick Albertson, and a conversation about the Epic Mountain Bike Festival.
Sasquatch fans will be descending on Brown County for the Indiana Bigfoot Conference. We have essays from Rick Fettig, Jim Eagleman, and Dave Seastrom.
This month, we're also celebrating the upcoming fun drive for WFHB with essays and promos from Chuck Wills, Sarah Lytle, and Rick Fettig.
We begin our first segment with the conversation we had with Dietrich Gosser. Dietrich is from Madison, Wisconsin, and now lives here in Brown County. You may have seen him at the Hoosier Original Music Association Songwriters Spotlight. Producer Chuck Wills draws from his own family's personal history, speaking truth to power and crafting a powerful essay calling on you to support public broadcasting as federal funding is stripped from our host station, WFHB.
So this is Dave Seastrom with the Brown County Hour, and I am here interviewing Dietrich Gosser, who has just treated us to a lovely live music presentation here in our studio. Thank you so much, Dietrich. It's a pleasure to see you again.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Yeah. Very original music.
Thank you.
You're a storyteller, but you, I don't know, you take us to unexpected places is what I think when I was listening to your music. I've been exploring your web presence and got a little bit of your story, and I thought it was very interesting that you developed quite a following in Chicago for a period of time and then moved back to Wisconsin, and now here you are in Indiana. You want to talk about some of the genealogy that brought you here? Or?
Sure. I grew up moving around the Midwest and landed in Madison, Wisconsin for college. I went to UW-Madison, and when there, met a lot of incredible musicians, including a drummer that I played with for many, many years named Dan Kimmel. Ultimately, I followed him to Chicago after college so that we could make some records together. But Madison, Wisconsin is a really easy place to return to. It's okay. A really beautiful place, really excellent music scene. And after 5 or 6 years in Chicago, found my way back to Madison, where I was really embraced and a part of a folk music scene there. And I played solo a lot. I played with a band with Dan Kimmel, with some other pickup musicians, that kind of thing. Ultimately ended up back in Indiana to work at the Brown County Inn for many, many years.
Right.
Yeah.
I listened to the recording of Oh to Begin, and I thought that was fascinating. And in fact, in some ways, it reminded me, it had elements in my mind of, I hope you like this association, but Pink Floyd.
Oh, excellent. Yeah.
And the reason I say that is because the layers of music and the use of sound as not strictly musical sound, but just the percussion of it and the way that it was all put together was really well done.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Yeah, I'm really proud of that song a lot. And that was really built in the making of the record. So Jeremiah Nelson produced Oh to Begin. He's an incredible singer-songwriter from Minnesota originally, but was part of the Madison scene for a long time. And he and I worked on kind of pulling that record together. And prior to making the record, he and Dan and I, Dan Kimmel, the drummer on the record, sort of woodshedded a bunch of stuff, you know, like got into a room and played a bunch of songs. And one of the things that we created out of that was this loop built around that guitar riff and sort of this rolling percussive sound. And so almost everything on the record is recorded live as a three-piece. Myself, Dan Kimmel, and Ben Willis on bass. But that song was built around a loop. So we looped this guitar, keyboards, and drum part, and then we played live over top of it, and then kind of built it up layers on layers in the recording studio, having a lot of fun.
So tell us a little bit about the music performed tonight. You said a lot of these songs are older songs that you have brought into this evening. And so let's just talk about that a little bit.
I've been writing songs for almost 30 years. But I've had fallow periods where I don't perform a lot or I don't write a lot, and really productive periods where I'm writing a lot. And I also used to perform with Dan Kimmel a lot, also with other musicians. And so sort of adapting some of the recordings that I've done in the past to solo performances is sort of like I'm kind of like revisiting a lot of things that I've played in the past. And so there's a number of these things that, like, you know, it's funny, you know, people come along and they play the hits from 20 years ago, right? Like, these were never hits, right? but as they come back around to me, they're, you know, like, I'm kind of like imbuing some of them with like more meaning, you know, like I've grown into some of these songs. Like, some of these songs didn't mean any, like they meant something to me, but over the years, like, I see myself in them more. You know, I can see who I was as a younger man. I can see what I was trying to say. And I can see, like, what still means something. If it holds any meaning for me, then, yeah, it's exciting to still sing that stuff. Or they might mean something completely different.
So your work now is focusing on being a solo player?
For the most part, I am... I'm in the infancy of a new recording project. Okay. Where I'm going to be working with an incredible guitar player and producer from Wisconsin named Josh Hardy. And he and I have been kind of throwing some stuff back around. I've also been playing some music with Isaac Carter, known as Father Kentucky.
Okay.
Plays around here, an incredible multi-instrumentalist.
Yes.
And vocalist. So we've been doing some stuff together. And so I'm hoping that that sort of comes together. I'd love to perform with a band again, but, you know, when you can sit down with a guitar and do it by yourself, you can kind of go anywhere.
Well, yeah, it's a lot less equipment to move, and sure, you don't have to pay the rest of the band members.
Not that I'm getting paid very much.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, you were talking about, you've got an event coming up.
Oh, yeah. I'll be playing at... Responder Aid, which is benefiting the volunteer fire departments in Brown County. That's going to be at Bill Monroe Music Park on Saturday, October 4th. The event runs all day long. There's music from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. I think most of the musicians have an hour-long slot. I'll be playing at 6 p.m. Father Kentucky, who I just referenced, right, he's going to be playing at 4 p.m. I think he'll join me for some of my sets.
Nice.
A whole list of other incredible Brown County musicians playing throughout the day.
Well, to those who might be hearing your music for the first time, do you have a web presence, a Facebook page, something that people can contact and follow you?
You can contact me on Facebook. So I'm Dietrich Gosser on Facebook, but you can find a lot of music on Bandcamp. So bandcamp.com/Dietrich Gosser. If you just search my name, I'm the only one out there. So most of the hits that you're going to see are going to link to me in one way or another. So there's music to be downloaded. I'm on Spotify. You can find me there. If you want to contact me, you can get me through Facebook.
Excellent. Thank you so much for coming in and sharing your wonderful music with us. It was really a treat.
Thanks.
And this is Dave Seastrom with the Brown County Hour, and I'm here with Dietrich Gosser.
Thanks, Dave.
The WFHB Fall Pledge Drive is coming up, so now is a good time to talk for a moment about the importance of local journalism. It's a big umbrella that includes news, entertainment, and current events, and the key thing they share is that they hit close to home, literally where you live. Local journalists understand the nuances of a place and what matters to the people who live there. They prioritize their reporting based on that. In our case, whether it's the latest on a local issue, or a homegrown poet or musician, or even national politics, it's all done with an eye to how it affects you and your neighbor. In an era of 24/7 worldwide connection, it's easy for the local piece to slip your mind. But the truth is, what happens in South Central Indiana may have a more direct impact on you than the latest tsunami in Honolulu. Here's the challenge. Local journalism is under pressure like never before, and I'm not overstating that. For years, WFHB, and by extension, our program, has been partially funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Recently, that funding was cut off by the federal government. We followed every rule to receive it, but the funds that were promised and expected next month have been clawed back. And there's no way around it. That affects how we deliver the news and entertainment that you have come to expect from us. News is a story, and when you're living it, it's your story. Years from now, when people look back on this chaotic time, it will likely be seen as a pivotal moment in our nation's history. So I ask, who will tell your story? The story of the people and events that matter to you. I believe local journalists will get it right, telling the story of now with the least bias and the most accuracy. For me, this is personal. My grandfather was a journalist. During World War II, he reported from Japan on CBS World News, sharing the airwaves with greats like Edward R. Murrow. He also owned Japan Newsweek, the only English-language newspaper in Tokyo in the 1930s and early 40s. He and my grandmother, who was his editor, reported from the center of enemy territory, often with coverage unflattering to the emperor and the Japanese government. It was local coverage with global impact. Later on in this century, their newspaper has been cited by journalism schools as one of the finest examples of information about World War II politics in Asia. Because of that outspoken reporting, they were arrested the morning after Pearl Harbor, subjected to a sham trial with no legal representation, and sentenced to prison as spies. Let's sit with that for a moment. They were imprisoned for telling the truth. After nearly a year, they were part of a prisoner exchange and returned to North America. And they went right back to work in newspapers and radio in smaller stations in the Midwest. My grandfather kept telling the truth, even when it was unflattering to the powers that be. He lost jobs more than once for refusing to retract statements or bend to popular opinion. His integrity came at a cost. And that's not lost on me. I have no illusions. What we're doing here pales in comparison to CBS World News in the 1940s. But I am convinced that our reporting is important and meaningful to our local community. WFHB's news team has won multiple awards, a testament to their talent and impact. And just like then, national politics has affected us, because public radio will not bend to government bias. We haven't been thrown in prison, but there is still a cost to integrity. That's why I'm asking for your help. I stand firmly behind local journalism and local public radio. I believe in it, as my family has for generations. The cost of our support is minimal compared to the benefit to our community. Stand with me and ensure that WFHB and the Brown County Hour stay on solid financial footing to deliver the journalism that you deserve. How do you do that? Join me at wfhb.org and make your donation today. History. It's written by someone. Who do you want writing yours? This is Chuck Wills for the Brown County Hour and WFHB.
Now we pause for station identification.
You are listening to the Brown County Hour on volunteer-powered community radio, WFHB, at 100.7 in Brown County, 91.3 and 98.1 in Bloomington, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at wfhb.org.
Support for WFHB comes from our Brown County, a magazine for locals and visitors featuring art, entertainment, and county characters since 1995. Printed 6 times a year and available online. More information at rbrowncounty.com.
In segment 2, Brown County's annual mountain biking festival returns this month. Brown County Epic is the primary fundraiser for the nonprofit organization Brown County Mountain Biking, which maintains our local bike trails. Organizers join us in the studio, backed by their sponsor, Brown County Bikes, who also talks about their women's mountain bike camp.
Naturalist Jim Eagleman sees common ground between plant biology and human immigration. Both are about seeking out optimal conditions to live free and grow. We'll close this segment with Dietrich Gosser's song, Abraham. But first, we begin segment two with a poetry feature. The author of the photo book, Brown County Folks, Rick Albertson, shares meditations from his new book, Stoveside Surveys, while seated next to the wood stove in his cabin on Greasy Creek Road. Each episode has a companion photo you can view on our website, and Rick starts each Stoveside Survey with a description of that photo.
Looking at a photo of a freshly stacked pile of red oak logs bathed in the glow of morning sunrise. Walk softly through the woods and carry a big stick, but listen carefully, and you just might hear a hushed conversation among the trees, deep, low whispers of distress, confusion, and consternation, voiced one to another. Why, oh why, death and dying. Our young cut down way too early, their brief lives only a few, maybe several seasons of budding leaves, falling leaves, now but a stack of firewood, soon to be cremated. Indeed, why do so many of our youth die too young? Disease, famine, war, accidents. Why him, not her? Why your children, not mine? Why those over there, not here? Why them, not me? Hello? Is anybody in charge?
This is Sarah Lytle with the Brown County Hour, and tonight we have some guests in the studio. I'm excited about this coming up. It's Epic Bike Festival, and they're going to tell us more about it.
Sure. Thanks, Sarah. My name's Alan Brown. I'm one of the board members for Brown County Mountain Biking. This event's been going on for 20-plus years, but about 3 years ago, Brown County Mountain Biking spun off from Hoosier Mountain Bike Association, became its own 501c3 chapter, and we kind of took over or became the managers of the trails in the Epic, if you will. So this event's very important to us. It's our biggest fundraiser for the trails. A lot of people don't realize that the trail system in the park and in Yellowwood are not maintained by the park staff. They're not maintained by tax dollars. All the trails are built and maintained by volunteers. And we rely on this event as our biggest fundraiser to keep all of that going. So this year we've got the festivals, we think it'll be a little bit bigger. We're expecting 700 riders this year. The vendor village is going to be a little bit bigger and more exciting. We've got demo bikes. We've got local shops, local restaurants are part of the mix this year. So we're very excited about it.
And who do you have there sitting next to you?
So I have my wife, Agata Formoso Mayan, and she's also the president of Brown County Mountain Biking.
How many years have you been involved with this?
Oh my goodness, this is probably my third year and first year as serving as president of the board.
Yeah, what's the most exciting thing for you about the mountain biking?
Just everything. I mean, truly it's the community that we are creating here in Brown County. We are a bronze level trail system, over 100 miles. If you count what we have in Hoosier National Forest, bronze level is a big deal.
So you bring people in from all over the country.
Yeah, absolutely. We have more elevation than people think here in Brown County. And we have all levels. I learned how to mountain bike here in Brown County State Park. So, you know, you have beginning levels, green trails, blue trails, all the way to very technical trails for anybody that wants to challenge themselves. And they are all maintained by volunteers. We have a team of 15 sawyers that have cut about 350 trees this year alone. We are working on making our trails adaptive for other bikers.
Nice.
And we maintain these trails all year around.
People who want to come to this festival, tell us about it. When is it?
It is on the 25th is the Thursday, 26th, Friday, 27th, Saturday. And by Sunday, we need you to wrap it up because we're all really tired. Music will begin on Friday by 1 o'clock and all the way till 11 p.m.
Okay.
With a lot of things going on. And we have a night ride that started last year. So everybody gets headlights on their helmets and off we go into the woods at night. We might have to surprise musicians in the middle of the woods this year.
And so how can people find out more about it? You have a website a place to contact?
Yeah, we have a Facebook page, browncountymountainbiking.com. We're on Instagram, and we also have a website page where you can find out more about the festival and how to get involved, really.
I want to thank you guys for coming in. We also have sponsors for the Brown County Epic Bike Festival, and that would be Kate and Danielle from Brown County Bikes.
Yeah. Hi, Sarah. Thank you so much for having us. I'm Kate Nolan, and this is my wife, Danielle Walter Nolan. And we're happy to be here, and we're happy to support the Brown County Epic. The festival is near and dear to us, and we're looking forward to it this September 25th through the 28th.
You also have another event happening in September.
Yeah, we have an annual women's mountain bike camp. It is September 12th through the 14th, and it's a ton of fun. Danielle, do you want to tell them a little bit more?
Yeah, we bring in women from usually about like 8 or 9 states come in, and it's all about getting more women outside, trying, you know, mountain biking, learning skills and fundamentals. We do skills in the morning, we break for lunch, and then we take what we applied or what we learned in the morning and apply it like right on the trails.
Mm-hmm.
So it's super fun.
Yeah, there's like an optional yoga in the mornings. We have catered meal plans. We also do campfire chats with special guests. And there's a 1-to-5 coach ratio, so all the participants are divided up based on their experience and their goals for the weekend. So you have some women who are trying to perfect their bunny hops and jumps, and you have some ladies that are on rented or borrowed bikes just out there trying to see if this is something they really want to pursue.
Just to wrap it up, give us again the details and how to contact you about the festival and your information.
So it's browncountymtb.org. And on Friday, September 26th of the festival, Brown County Bikes is donating. You can do jump clinics. So that's at 10 a.m. or 1 p.m. And you can sign up for those. All those proceeds go directly to Brown County Mountain Biking.
Okay, thank you so much. Again, this is a Brown County Hour. Sarah Lytle with the folks from Epic Bike Festival and the Brown County Bikes.
This is Rick Fettig with the Brown County Hour. Here in our country, we have a tendency to tip our servers, like when we go out to eat and stuff. So I'm asking you to tip your server, the one that serves you great music and great local news and current events throughout the year, WFHB. WFHB Fall Fun Drive starts this Wednesday, September 10th, and runs through Sunday, September 21st. This is your chance to support independent community media with a pledge of support at WFHB.org. Just click on the big red donate button. Your donation is more important now than it's ever been. Federal funding cuts have left WFHB in the red. It is 100% up to you and me to set the public in public radio. So pledge your support to WFHB during the Fall Fun Drive at WFHB.org. Just click on that big red donate button.
This is Jim Eagleman for Nature Ramblings. I like to learn about plants. And like you, I tend to transplant them and move new natives around our home landscaping to see what grows well. I like to key out the unknown plants I come upon, remove the aliens. I like to read about trees and shrubs, ferns and grasses. And I'm always looking at plants as I walk along any trail. And like seeing them as old friends, I try to recall their scientific name, the plant family they belong to, and often the name does come back in time, which is maybe less important than the actual plant and its ecologic niche, its place. Lately, with much listening to the news and world issues, I began to see a parallel to my love of plants and people. There may be more similarities, I thought, than not, and the more I saw the situation with some people, some cultures, some ethnic groups and their struggle, I could see a similar struggle with plants. You don't need to be a botanic knowledge or have much interest in it to see when a plant's not doing well. That may be due to a lot of things like location and sunlight and soil. My gardening skills are lacking, and I don't see these failing signs until way too late. It makes me realize I had better stick to purchasing my vegetables from the farmer's market, and lately from friends who run a CSA, a community-supported agriculture program. Sweet corn grown and sold at produce stands, and many of them along Brown County roads, help me realize there are better gardeners at work with more patience and skill. People, too, seek better living conditions, like plants. We prefer to grow and live where all the conditions are right. That may be near family, the right hospital, more community. The right place for us, I recall a friend saying about his move here, the terms quality of life and freedom and so much greenery, those terms were also mentioned. So we settle in, we put down roots, respond like plants. Plants move. I know this from a several-year study of deer exclosures we constructed at Brown County State Park. These fenced-in 40-by-40 structures, 8 feet high, were built in a variety of habitats with sun exposure and elevation considered. With each visit, I monitored 6 sites inside the fenced-in enclosure and 6 sites outside. The purpose here was to see what plants deer preferred, to what extent will browsing completely remove a plant, and how much change in height and stem size exists maybe from year to year. Small stakes in the ground told me where to place my hula hoop, which gave me about a 3-foot diameter circle to test. From 1 year to the next, a small clump of wildflowers or grass clumps, and over time even ferns, would move. And I read in Poor Soils that plants can grow flowers and eventual seeds and spores. They drop them onto new ground where soil may be a slight bit better, so the next growth is a few inches away from where it was first noticed. I also was to watch for any new plants that might respond to protection from deer, and over the 6-year study, there were many. People seeking better living conditions where they feel safe is certainly a reason why we see immigration happening. Driven by their chances for a new job, to live with the support of family, to escape dangers, it's a biologic need to feel safe. An emotional need exists, too, in relocating. I heard I might be able to get a better living. I could maybe provide better for my family, maybe own a house. If I can change, it might be for the better. I've been thinking of our current national affair and the confusion the administration is making of immigration. For people trying to relocate, we've been told they are rapists, thieves, and the worst. So, of course, we can't let them enter. I'm not sure how this statement can totally describe an entire population, and I see it part of the plan to deceive, to create doubt. If I continue to think this way and get a wrong impression, I think then that all people are bad, and I want them all out to stay. Like my good friend Jack Weddle used to say, it looks good, and it looks like it belongs there, when he referred to a plant, maybe a tree, and maybe even a rock. And with plants, it may be sunlight, a length of daylight, or the land that it allows to grow there. When it grows and the conditions are right, it flourishes. Jack was a profound thinker. He taught school here in Brown County and would talk of the kids after graduation as they flew away. He'd say, they're flying away like milkweed seeds. Biologist, Purdue professor, and well-recognized team leader of the Wolf Study at Isle Royal said, in diversity, there's stability. He was referring to the variety of plants available to the moose population on the island, and that brought in the wolves. And like any biologist, he recognized populations of any kind benefit when there's a variety. Plant diversity, he said, can be equated to cultural diversity. poet William Sloane Coffin said, "Diversity may be the hardest thing for a society to live with, and perhaps the most dangerous thing for a society to live without."
Born in April, those fresh spring waters boil. In this life, such joy and strife, it drives an old crow wild. My father named Abraham, his father did the same. These sins of pride from theirs and mine, you can't escape your name. Him down. Last night, my fight of modern life was a river I just drowned. But I used to fight for everything. I went westward for the gold. But it's insane to stake a claim this land could never hold. Crooked arm for everything, a shadow of a man. Across this land, you'll know me when I finally make my stand.
We pause for station identification.
You are listening to the Brown County Hour on Volunteer Powered Community Radio, WFHB, at 100.7 in Brown County, 91.3 and 98.1 in Bloomington, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at WFHB.org.
Support for WFHB comes from the Brown County Inn, located just off the main street of Nashville, Indiana, at 51 State Road 46 East. Brown County Inn is also a restaurant, bar, and gathering place for visitors and locals alike. More information at browncountyinn.com. In segment 3, Sasquatch fans claim that Brown County is prime Bigfoot territory. Leroy Nail and Debbie Sims from the Indiana Bigfoot Research Organization are here to talk about the upcoming Indiana Bigfoot Conference, September 26th and 27th at the Seasons Lodge in Nashville. The event includes expert speakers, a public town hall session, and an expedition to a local Bigfoot activity area. Rick Fettig celebrates his birthday by rolling with the flow. Dave Seastrom has a few thoughts about salvaging an old ballroom floor. And we'll close the show with Dietrich Gosser's song, Mercury Links.
This is Chuck Wills with the Brown County Hour, and we are talking about Bigfoot. Tonight, we have Leroy Nail and Debbie Sims from the Indiana Bigfoot Research Organization, and they're going to talk all about the upcoming Indiana Bigfoot Conference. Welcome.
Well, Thank you. Thanks.
Yeah, we had you in last year. Mm-hmm. Last year was your very first conference.
Yes, it went very well. We sold out before the conference ever went. We had sold out, and we had a great turnout on Friday night when we have our town hall at the Seasons Conference Center. And then Saturday we had a large crowd again to come in to see the vendors plus the speakers.
Tell us, what is the town hall? What is that about?
The town hall is to bring people in so they'll tell us their stories. It gives them a safe space that they can come in, tell their story, and not have someone looking at them like they're totally crazy. Because we want to hear that story.
Right.
Wait, you're telling me that some people don't believe in Bigfoot?
Yeah, I'm telling you that. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and a plus with that, some of our speakers will also be there. So they'll get to talk to them, and this gets the speakers' opinions on some of their thinking or experiences.
Okay. So the town hall is a time of sharing
because
in the group.
That's one of the things. There's a lot of experiences that go on that people never talk about because they're afraid to talk about it. Unless they get around people that they know that's not going to look at them and laugh.
Like-minded.
Yeah. Like-minded. Mm-hmm. And look at them and kind of go, yeah, that's normal. What you experienced is normal. And that's what we really want the town hall for, and to get as many of those people talking as we can.
Yeah, and the town hall is open to the public. The vendors and the town hall on the 26th is open to the public.
Yes, that is open
to
the public.
It starts at 3 and is to be done at 7 on the 26th.
And the vendors are open. It's open to the vendors at the same time.
Yeah.
So you can get into all the vendors, and that is a free event to the public.
Okay, well, let's talk about when this takes place. It's at the Seasons Lodge and Conference Center on September 26th and 27th.
Right.
And on the 26th, you've got vendors that start at 3 o'clock and go till 7. You've got a town hall that you were just talking about that goes from 5 until 7.
Right.
Okay.
And then after that, which is already sold out, but we're going to have a fireside chat. And what that is, we're going to an undisclosed location in the woods and actually go squatching with our team and some of our speakers that's coming in.
So a real up-close and personal experience for these folks.
Yeah. Yes.
So tell me some about the speakers that you have coming.
We've got Mike Miller, which is out of Ohio. Got a real good recording of one and... kind of he really got popular because of that recording. And then we've got Tom Shea coming out of Kentucky. I call Tom Shea the real deal. A lot of people are into this either for money, fame. Tom Shea is neither. He's not in it for money. He's not in it for the fame, any of that. He's out there just really collecting the evidence.
Boots on the ground.
And then we've also got Dusty Ruth coming out of Ohio. He works right along with Tom Shea. He's coming. We've got Ronnie LeBunk.
Yeah, he was on Expedition Bigfoot for four seasons.
Okay, so overall, your speakers are truly experts in the Bigfoot world.
Yeah, and then we've also got, we're bringing back Greg Yost out of Southern Indiana. We call him the Squatch Man because he goes out and talks to him and gets all kind of responses. And everybody enjoyed him so much last year and asked for him to come back again this year. So we're bringing Greg back again this year.
Why did you choose Brown County for this event?
There's a couple reasons on it. But one of the main reasons is we're sitting in the middle of Bigfoot country. And people don't realize that, especially here in Nashville, you know, in Brown County. We can go anywhere around Brown County and there's activity. you step right over in Yellowwood, there's activity. You go to the park, you go to Brown County Park and step on over into the park in Hoosier National, there's activity. You go north of here, there's activity. No matter where you go, there's activity around this area.
When you talk about activity, are these things, are they signs that the average person might overlook? Do you need to be looking for it to see it?
Yeah, there's signs that a lot of things people overlook. And plus, when a Sasquatch screams or does anything, most people don't realize what it is. And the last thing they're thinking of is Sasquatch.
Yeah.
So that's why people, the hunters will go, I've hunted my whole life and I've never seen anything. Until you start asking them questions and then they start going, huh. And then they start thinking back to their experiences in the woods and they go, wow, that's interesting. And all it can do is make them think. Because we're not going to convince them.
Sure.
Not until they go out and experience something themselves, you're not going to believe it.
So if you're a hunter or really anybody else, you can come to the town hall and meet the experts on September 26th and 27th at the Indiana Bigfoot Conference. We've been speaking with Leroy Nail and Debbie Sims of the Indiana Bigfoot Research Organization. You can learn more at indianabigfootconference.com.
This is Rick Fettig with the Brown County Hour. Greetings and good day to everyone. This is my birthday month, and that makes me a Virgo. Since there's no one to converse with at home, I often browse my YouTube channel for some intelligent topics. And I've watched a few little videos that tell what one's horoscope sign is, and I don't watch the doom and gloom ones, but the other ones seem fairly accurate. And the ones I've seen, they all have a giant deck of cards. They always seem to fumble and drop a card from time to time. And somehow, those cards, when interpreted, tell us what the sun and moon and stars have to say about our current conditions, and to some degree, what the future holds. I don't follow much of that stuff, but I believe there are many ways of fortune-telling, if you want to call it that. I have heard it said that for anything to withstand the test of time, there has to be an element of truth in it somewhere. Look at all the religions, for example. They are all a little bit different, but there are also a lot of similarities. The truth is always the same and consistent. You know how they say if you tell a lie, you have to remember it, and if you stick to the truth, well, it is what it is. A lie, or even just an inaccuracy, will always eventually be corrected by the truth or the actual facts. So back to the passing of time, I've been working on a song by Charlie Rich, Rolling with the Flow. It also has been popping up on the YouTube channel. It seems to be my motto these days. If you think about it, what other choice do we have? We can try to control everything, and that often leads to frustration because we can't control everything. If you're really good at controlling and manipulating life's course of events, you can probably have a pretty good life with all the physical amenities one could ever want. This is often shallow, though, because that is the focal point of your thoughts. Things. We can also let life have its way with us and be subject to whatever it brings. This method doesn't take into consideration our participation. The circumstances just control us. There are things we can't control, and there are some we can. As we watch how time evolves, our participation is crucial. Every thought and decision we make influences the current situation, which leads into the next situation, and on we go, rolling with the flow. Watch for open doors, those little miracles or synchronicities, and have the courage and boldness to move forward with them and experience the greatness of life. Synchronicities breeds synchronicity. I'm thankful to have this opportunity to share with you my birthday and the passing of time. Peace and love, folks. This is Rick Fettig with the Brown County Hour. I'm out.
The WFHB Fall Fun Drive starts this Wednesday, September 10th, and runs through Sunday, September 21st. This is your chance to support independent community media with a pledge of support at wfhb.org. Just click on that big red donate button. Your donation is more important now than it's ever been. Federal funding cuts have left WFHB in the red. It is 100% up to you and me to put the public in public radio. So pledge your support to WFHB during the fall fund drive at WFHB.org. Just click on that big red donate button.
We have several items in our home that were salvaged from other buildings. The front door was pulled from a dumpster when I was working on a project in Indy. The 100-year-old Cypress door originally came from a house that was located on 40th and Washington Boulevard. The kitchen cabinets came from the house that I grew up in, also in Indy. And the handrail on the stairs originated from a house in Brooklyn, New York. Perhaps the most distinctive salvage item is our living room floor. We have an oak parquet floor that was salvaged from the ballroom of the Marriott Hotel in Indianapolis. This material was removed when the hotel was remodeled and made into apartments several years ago. I'm not exactly sure how my friend Jack Forney got his hands on this material. I know he intended to use it in his own home, but he never did. When he offered me the material, I jumped at the opportunity. Originally, the floor was laid in a bed of tar on a concrete subfloor. By the time I got a hold of it, the material was a tar-covered sorry mess, but it had potential. A wire wheel was chucked into the electric drill that was clamped into a set of sawhorses in the backyard, and when I had a few minutes here or there, I cleaned the tar off the tiles. It took a few weeks to accumulate enough material for the living room floor. This was in the mid-80s, long before the internet, and I researched how to attach this floor to our own concrete subfloor by talking with folks from the flooring companies. Eventually, I lucked out, and I had a conversation with an older guy who had laid many of these floors, and he told me how to do it. He recommended that I use a product that's no longer available, tar-based cutback adhesive. When the floor was glued down, I rented a drum sander and brought the surface back to life. After several years of service, a small, unobserved leak developed at one of the water filters under the kitchen sink. Water migrated under the floor, causing the center of the living room to swell, and what happened next can only be described as an explosion. At this point, any sane person would have abandoned this floor and replaced it with something more practical. But I was romantically attached to this material, and the blown-out portion was repaired. To make sure this never happened again, I installed a shower pan under the kitchen sink, and the floor has remained dry ever since. The thing is, after the repair was made, I never got around to refinishing the floor. For the last 10 years or so, we had a throw rug covering the unfinished portion and forgot about it. A few weeks ago, an opportunity presented itself and I was offered help with the project. My friend Tony and I mixed up a batch of thickened epoxy and filled the gaps in the parquet tiles. When the epoxy cured, we began the long process of finishing the floor. The first time I applied the finish, I used a heavy-duty urethane that stank to be damned, and it left an unacceptably glossy surface. Since only half of the floor had this finish, the only thing to do was take the entire floor back to raw wood. As soon as we started in, it became obvious that sanding the old finish off would take forever, and we had to up our game. The solution was to use an electric hand planer. This is a rather aggressive tool that removes a lot of material quickly, and it must be carefully used. The Marriott Hotel was completed in 1926, and I believe the ballroom floor was original to that time. Over the years, many famous and not so famous people have danced or walked across this floor. The list includes Booth Tarkington, Paul Newman, Marilyn Monroe, John F. Kennedy, Bob Hope, Babe Ruth, Herbert Hoover, Helen Hayes, Lauren Bacall, and Winston Churchill. My grandparents, parents, uncles, and aunts are all in that number. All of that is pretty cool, but for me, the topper is imagining Clark Gable and Carol Lombard taking a spin on this ballroom floor in each other's arms. Maybe they were waltzing or dancing the tango, Or maybe they were swinging to Tommy and Jimmy Dorsey. Just the thought of it makes me smile. This isn't just a collection of oak pieces fashioned into a parquet floor. What we have is a touchstone into the history of old Indianapolis, right here in the backwoods of Brown County. This is Dave Seastrom. See you next time.
From a Mercury Lynx.
What is the final stanza? That old familiar song. Used to sing it on vacation. Driving days were long. Marco in his fishing boat and a tree that wouldn't move. And a girl and a guardian and a carriage ride for two. The final verdict, I'll just tell it like it is, and save my sarcasm for midnight, when we're just pulling in, and the car fumes and the snowstorm haven't slowed us yet tonight. Miles between us and the town we left behind. Da 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 da. With his head against the door, I shut my eyes just a moment, and we're back in Illinois. I shut my eyes for just a moment, and we're back in Illinois.
Thanks for tuning in to episode 162 of the Brown County Hour. This show was recorded in our studio at the History Center here in downtown Nashville and brought to you the first Sunday of every month at 9 a.m. and the following Wednesday at 6 p.m. and anytime online. Be sure to look for us on your favorite streaming services.
The Brown County Hour is brought to you by a diverse group of folks who believe, now more than ever, the world is for everyone.
This show was produced by
Chuck Wills,
Pam Rader,
Rick Fettig,
Vera Grubbs,
Lucy Schultz,
Sarah Lytle,
Chad Carruthers,
and Dave Seastrom. We would also like to thank Slats Klug for our theme music. You have been listening to the Brown County Hour.
Coming to you from deep in the woods of Brown County, Indiana.
Celebrating the arts, culture, and nature that make this such a unique community.
Visit us online at browncountyhour.com.
The Brown County Hour is a production of WFHB.
Volunteer-powered, listener-supported community radio for South Central Indiana.
Take me back to my home, Brown County. Home.